Hey, thanks for joining us today. This is John Pendleton with Scott Insurance Risk Services, and I've got Alex Shaw here from our Scott Risk Performance Group.
Hey, doing fine. How about you? Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening in.
Yeah, man. Thank you for doing this. I'm really excited about today's conversation. We have the fortunate position to sit courtside inside a lot of companies that are in various businesses. And the one commonality is they all face a lot of risk, financial risk. But in many cases, a lot of our clients are in high-risk businesses. And so today, I really want to try and pick your brain around, you know, you've been doing this for years. Scott Risk Performance has been around for almost 30 years. Let's talk a little bit about what's the most effective way to manage risk. And the insurance industry has their views, and the compliance industrial complex, as we like to say, has right. their own views. And I think it's fair to say that we have our own view. And maybe if you could kind of just start out with some comments around maybe how we view things, and most importantly, why we view them that way and what makes that different.
Yeah, well, one of the outside of just risk, one of the great commonalities that businesses have is, at least for the time being, until Grok and ChatGPT and all of these AI models and Deep Blue take over and make us obsolete, is people. And, you know, as a client once told me years ago, people are the best part of our business, and they're also the most challenging. And, well, he actually said the worst part of our business. And those things are true. And so much of risk comes into people management. And what you find is that what you're trying to attempt to do is bring people on board into your organization. And to put it just directly, indoctrinate them into the set of values that you hold dear as a company. And to not just let that be lip service, but allow that to be demonstrable in how you're designed and how you do the work and how you interact with people, how you deliver your product, how you go about the interaction of risk, which we would contend, you know, risk is not a bolt-on to your business. Risk is the most beautiful thing about your business. It's the essence of commerce. It's where the opportunity for reward is. And nothing material in life for any of us that's been meaningful has been achieved through safety. And that's just the stark and just deep truth there. And so at Scott, we almost cringe a little bit when we talk about safety because that's more of a feeling than it is a reality. So what's in a name? Well, you know, our group at Scott is called the Risk Performance Group. And that wasn't just pulled out of thin air because it sounded neat. It's because we don't believe in running from risk. We believe in performing in it. And so part of the question should be, what even is risk? And how do you delineate between that and what some people call safety and what some folks focus on being compliance, which you all have to focus on because you have to be in compliance to be in business. But the question should be, what levers can you pull to efficiently play in the game of risk so that you come out on the other end with the reward that you're pursuing? And so we can get into some detail around the delineation between risk, operational risk, and compliance, but I'd say at a pretty high level, that's kind of the fundamental nature of how we view ourselves and our perspective on risk.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, insurance companies with whom we work all day long are pretty strict about how they view risk and pretty direct about the way they feel like the best way to manage it should be. And in many cases, what we experience is a loss control engineer from a carrier coming in with a clipboard, with a checklist, with all sorts of different compliance-related areas that they feel like you should focus around, DOT, OSHA. Can you talk a little bit about how, you know, let's take the fatality rate as an example. Talk a little bit about kind of compliance-oriented focus that the carrier pushes on a regular basis, why that's important, yet it may not necessarily be as important or more, better said, as effective focusing on compliance versus maybe focusing on things in a different way?
Right. It's a great question. And so what I don't want people, and I think you and I agree on this, and at Scott, we agree, what we don't want people to do is to take any element of this conversation and say, you know what, let's just throw compliance out. We don't need to focus on that at all, because that's just not the case. You can't do that. You're going to have OSHA and MSHA and, you know, all these regulatory agencies show up, and they have a specific subset of information they're trying to collect. Now, the devil's in the details there. No one will understand the risks of your business like you do. And that's maybe one of the more refreshing things that we talk to clients about when we say, look, there are layers of complexity to even the press break operation for your sheet metal manufacturing. There are levels to that that we don't fully grasp because we don't live in your business every single day, and it would be incredibly patronizing to assume that we did. And so what regulatory compliance does is takes their best stab, frankly, on a very low-resolution basis at managing your risk, at defining it, and trying to put together a window for how to proceed forward, looking out the window, looking out the driver's windshield. If you check these boxes and these things are spaced X amount of feet apart, then you'll be able to manage your risk well. And what we know is that that's been tried and tested. And we have a lot of proof sources of companies at this point and clients we've worked with who are very well-intentioned. They care deeply about their people. And so they've invested heavily in programs and consultants and in internal teams to focus on risk management through a safety department. And the safety department often does that through the lens of regulatory compliance. Now, let's take a look at the overall picture that we should all beg the question, well, wait a second. This is kind of a very distinct shift in how we've thought about risk and safety, and so let's roll with that. So starting in 1992, the fatality rate per 100,000 employees was 3.5, and that's across all industries. If you fast forward to today, to last year, the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with the data last year, it's 3.5. And if you look at every year that precedes last year, all the way backing into 1992, you'll see the same thing. There is no deviation outside the standard deviation from 3.5. So it's 3.4, 3.5, 3.6, 3.7. That's the fatality rate. And we've had hundreds of thousands of OSHA 10 trainings, OSHA 30 trainings, superintendents, foremen, indoctrinated into a system and a knowledge base recognizing hazards and
and new regulations, and right?
23 new regulations since 1992. And so if you're in the risk management world, I think it's time we all take the truth serum and say, well, there's a lot of inputs to that with zero material impact on what we really value the most, which is quality of life and the protection of our employees' lives. So we're continuing to have people die on the job. We've got a tremendous amount of these efforts and activities and inputs that aren't materializing in any substantive difference or any difference at all. So if you're listening, you might say, well, then what's the path forward? Well, what do we do then to manage our risk? We're well-intentioned. We're willing to invest a lot of money. We're willing to do the right things. We just don't know what they are. And what I would say is we've been the huge, huge beneficiaries at Scott of being a part of an organization that allows us the space to go and just be with clients, to interact with clients, to spend as much time as we can with them, to understand their operations, to understand their people, their politics, their organizational priorities, the logistics of how their business runs, how they manage risk, their philosophy behind that, their philosophy behind their business, and learn as much as we possibly can. And through that experience, we've been very fortunate to see companies answer that question for us, which is distinctly through an operational lens of excellence. And so what does that mean? There's a lot of layers there and a lot of kind of arrows in the quiver, I guess you could say. And what I would tell you is no single one is the silver bullet that allows you to nail the target. But in aggregate, when you put them together, they can be a really robust, system for you to perform in the risk, if you will.
Yeah, and one thing that's cool is when you see these companies that are performing at a high level, I don't think it's an accident that they are excellent from a risk management standpoint and excellent from an operational standpoint. And what's really fun to see is that's both true with organizations with over 1,000 employees and organizations that maybe have 50 employees. And as you're saying, it looks different at every company, but the theme is, you know, instead of that huge focus on compliance and managing risk through compliance, they, in various ways, are focused on managing risk through operational improvements and operational excellence. Could you maybe unpack a little bit of what that looks like practically?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, while this conversation sounds great, prove it to me.
Right.
Give me an example of some results.
Well, you call me.
Yeah. You're a fraud.
Yeah.
But why don't you start with some examples of what are some operational things that don't relate to compliance?
Right. Well, and this goes back to there's going to be overlap because, remember, compliance, if you look at the OSHA manual for construction, are those standards supposed to apply to, is all construction created equal? Framing, electrical, mechanical, underground utilities, roofing, you know, there's a lot to construction. So there's no way, again, it's their best stab. But when we think about the companies that perform really well, it's not because they hold an annual meeting. It's not because they hold a quarterly meeting. It's because, as we like to say, organizations are perfectly designed for the results they get. So what they're designed to do, and I've got probably about 6 or 7 of them that I'm thinking of right now, in the construction, the mining, the agricultural worlds, and what they're perfectly designed to do is to calibrate and to learn on a regular basis with some significant frequency and cadence where they bring the people who are the most competent in the work being done, that's their operational team, and they're sharing stories. I mean, that's what so many companies live and breathe on, is this ethos and ecosystem of storytelling. And what does that tell you? It's, one, if you're willing to share stories about your successes and your failures, it means you're caring, and it means you're calibrating your overall competence. So you're elevating the position and the understanding and transferring the knowledge to the employees who maybe don't have as much experience or as deep a sense for how the work really should be getting done. And if you're doing that on a regular basis, you're going to refine your overall operational performance that just so happens to coincide with risk performance. So that can take the form of many things. People are leveraging technology more and more. We have clients who have Monday morning meetings where every single week their entire company, you know, hundreds of employees, get on the same page. They talk about process improvements. And these are division managers and branch leaders and operational folks who are largely sharing these stories, process improvements, talking about, you know, wins and losses and what's working, what's not working, what new equipment they've invested in, what they're finding out from that, incidents they've had, and soliciting for feedback if anyone has had that same incident and what they did to respond to it. So it's this constant kind of system of calibrating, learning, adapting, and adjusting and moving forward. So there's a cadence of meetings. You know, some have a technical training for 45 minutes every week where they bring in their equipment manager and they're talking through the grease points on these pieces of equipment and all the unique particulars to each brand. It's a spirit of learning and improving, leveraging technology for communication channels, be it Slack or otherwise, Microsoft Teams. But then also, I think we talked about earlier, like what do the best companies do? What do they demonstrate when they really perform in the risk? And if you had to distill it down to two pieces, it would be they demonstrate through how they're designed that they're striving for competence, technical competence for how the work gets done, and they want to imbue their people with a sense of care. Like, we care about being the best. We care about improving. We care about continuous evolution of how we get the work done. And so there are many other ways that we could talk about, but and you know, as far as results go, ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so I mean, it sounds like that the big first step, so to speak, is, you know, they have created a venue and a medium for continuous learning across the organization.
Right.
And that can really, you know, go across a spectrum of things, but they have been dedicated at educating their workforce. Maybe that's around incident response, but in many ways, it's about just operational improvements. And they have built a regular venue for that idea sharing,
right,
and improvement. What are some other things that you see, say, you know, we were talking the other day about one of the clients you worked with that was really trying to tackle how they handle new employee onboarding. Mm. You know, another example of the merger between operations and risk, it's very commonly known that significant amount of work comp injuries occur with an employee who's only been there less than 6 months. And, you know, that's the risk aspect. But then you also have the operational aspect of, hey, you want to be able to attract and retain people. And a big part of that is, again, operational excellence. So can you talk a little bit about what you did with that one client around their new hire boot camp?
Yeah. So, I mean, when we distill it down to competence and caring, it's a little bit like what you see with companies who have a set of values that they talk about. Now, some companies, and many I would contend, they've got a set of values that are really, really important to the leadership team because they were part of their development. But when you get out to the field, the employees don't know anything about it. So that's an organization that's designed for the results they get. If there's no infrastructure mechanism to imbue employees with this sense of whatever the values are by demonstrating that through action, you're going to fall short of expectations. So what we've seen more and more over years and what we've been a part of helping develop are things like new supervisor boot camps or new hire boot camps. So what does that do? You sell yourself as a company to employees you're trying to hire. We believe in continuous improvement. You know, we believe in the value of each individual employee. We believe in their quality of life. We believe that each one has a light in them that has the potential to improve the overall operations of this business, to be the next generation of leadership. You know, we believe that every opinion matters, whatever it might be. But if there isn't a specific design that demonstrates and reinforces that, it's lip service to a degree. And so,
and then you sound like every other company.
Exactly. And people are incredibly intuitive. I mean, they'll pick that up very quickly. They can read it first day. You hear a bunch, and then you go out to the field, and you go, uh-huh, yeah, okay, just as I thought.
Too good to be true.
So these boot camps are a demonstrable action that show, hey, we're willing to invest. And admittedly, it's not easy. You know, you've got to contend with people's schedules. Some people don't hire on a regular cadence, so you've got to kind of course correct and adjust the schedule. But what we see is folks who say, we've got a few new folks coming in, and we want to make sure that they understand exactly what they're accountable for, their role within the company, all of the folks, the other folks' roles. So you show them an accountability chart, an organization chart, and then you have them go spend for a week. You know, some do it longer, but many are looking at 1 week. You're going to spend a day with the equipment manager. You're going to understand why greasing these pieces of equipment is so critical. You're going to see how involved their work is with vendor relationships and how all the efforts that this, you know, equipment manager goes through, all the lengths to ensure they've got a good relationship so that when something breaks down, they can get it responded to quickly. How much they move around and work and how critical taking care of the horses, as some like to say, is, the horses being the equipment, in allowing us to not have to do backbreaking labor the way they did 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago. Then you have them spend time with the project managers. Not just spending time, but doing the work itself. Riding along with the sales team. I don't know if you're aware, but in a lot of companies, there's some friction between operations and sales.
Right.
And so it allows you to see the other side of this, to know, look, when these folks are writing estimates, they're not just pulling it out of a hat. It's actually a really challenging thing to do, to contend with what the client wants when they sometimes don't know what they want, but they know they want some guidance and direction, and then you try to put together a reasonable estimate. By the time it hits the field, sometimes there are the balls that have been dropped. And so having these folks do the estimates with the sales team, it's a part of togetherness and better understanding of each other's roles. Having them spend time with operations, interviewing folks, seeing just the day-to-day, a day in the life of every single person, seeing the scheduling team and sitting with them and being forced to call a client to cancel an appointment and experiencing what being on the other line, end of the line, is like. And it isn't easy, and it's challenging. There's a keen recognition that, look, everybody's jobs here are different, but they're all hard in their own way. And here's the role I play within us winning overall as a company. And so that investment and exposure early on to see, where am I, what's my role within this team and the overall picture, and what do I need to do to live up to the expectations that are being placed ahead of me? Instead of being thrown out to the field where you say, hey, you know, get to the job on Monday, your boss is going to be Tim, and he'll tell you what to do. Yeah. You're also providing Tim a bit more of a polished product who can now back trailers, back equipment up. They've been checked off on their, you know, driving checklists. And so you're just sending a more qualified candidate out to the field.
Yeah, and I think if you have a situation in which that new employee is injured in those first 6 months, that's a very stark contrast between two different potentials. In situation one, you have a new employee who feels invested in, feels like he knows all areas of the company, feels like he can trust the company. And, you know, if it's a work comp claim, as an example, it's unfortunate. And there's always a temptation of, man, should I go get an attorney? Is this company going to turn its back on me? Well, in situation one, I'm going to say, you know what? This is horrible. I've never been in this situation. But I know I can trust the company because they've shown me that for the last 6 months, right? And we'll get through this together. And then you have situation number two, which is, man, I'm working at Heights. They kind of just threw a harness at me, and I slipped and fell, and maybe I broke an ankle or something worse. These guys haven't invested anything in me, and in fact, the only thing they gave me didn't work. So, you know, I am definitely going to get an attorney, right? And so you see very quickly how poor operational performance plays into a higher risk scenario right out of the gate.
No doubt. And the beauty of a framework like I've just described, and I'm being careful not to name names of clients, sure, and that kind of thing, but we have several examples of this, which we'd be happy to talk through at more depth with folks. But the beautiful thing about like a new hire or new supervisor boot camp is that it is actually a framework for a return to work program too. And that's how many have leveraged it, because you've already got the infrastructure for how to keep people busy. And it's also, it's got the added benefit of being a prospective lender. So you're not just sending them out to do rote, mundane work. You're giving them perspective about, again, reaffirming their role in the company and how they interact with others. And so it can be a really powerful medium that extends beyond what you might originally anticipate.
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity that is unforeseen. Can you kind of, we're talking a lot of theory and we're talking, you know, a little more practical, because you built this program with one of our clients. But for somebody who's going to say, hey, that sounds great, there's a lot of talking, what are the results? Getting back to my comment earlier. So let's just use this one example of that client who works at Height, who works with chainsaws, who is in a very high-risk industry.
Yep.
With limited resources, by the way. This is not a company that has a billion-dollar income statement.
Right.
Talk about their results from a risk performance perspective.
Yeah, you know, it's been, and again, you can't really put your finger on exactly what is driving the performance, but it's an aggregate of things.
Sure.
And so, you know, in the past 4 years, they've only had one serious injury in the over 25 years of operating in an industry that specifically in their subset of work, which is arboriculture, has a fatality rate of 17 per 100,000 employees. Big risk industry. And they've only had one serious injury in the past over 25 years. And that's not because they're lucky. You don't get lucky. It's because at every turn, they've been designed to pursue greatness. So, in fact, it's rare, if ever, they ever talk about safety. It's all about technical competence. Competence is the ultimate currency there. And so as a consequence, and this isn't the only client we've got that we could talk you through a profile of what their performance looks like. There's a slew of others where we would have, the numbers would be a little different, but the material results would be the same. And in their case, it's loss ratios of 16%, 13%, 1%, and 1%. And I've been very deeply embedded with them, so I know every single injury is reported. They are not putting anything under the rug. They are performing with high consistency and high competence on a daily basis. And again, they're designed to do that. They are designed using technology and Slack channels and technical trainings every Thursday for 45 minutes and team leader meetings and new hire orientations and new supervisor boot camps. And I said orientations, but they're boot camps because, by the way, they do have attrition. Like no boot camp, any good boot camp should have attrition. And so they're really screening for, are these folks, do they get it? Are they going to like this work? Are they going to be able to engage with it? And the net result of that is a really robust culture of people who care and who are competent. And as a result, again, those loss ratios of 16%, 13%, 1%, 1%. You know, folks aren't familiar with loss ratios. It might be worth explaining a bit, but I think most probably do.
Yeah, I mean, for those that are not familiar, that's the difference. That's the difference between the amount of premium dollars the insurance company takes in compared with the amount of claims dollars that the company has to pay out. And so, you know, a profitable loss ratio really for a carrier is maybe 33% or below. As it goes north of 33, 40%, it becomes even worse for the carrier, which means the company is having a lot of claims. You know, a company performing at a 16, 13% loss ratio over time is incredible in general. But then when you layer in the fact that they are in such a high-risk business, you know, doing tree work at height, that's almost unheard of. And I think, again, the key piece from all of this is the old adage, how you do one thing is how you do everything. And so it isn't just the fact that they had a new hire boot camp. That's one outcropping of this philosophy of focusing on operational excellence as opposed to focusing solely on compliance.
Right.
And so with these folks, it's a new hire boot camp. They've created that venue as well for continuous learning. I mean, we could go on and on. And again, the great thing about this is a small company. This isn't a company with a big budget. This isn't a company that has, you know, a ton of employees, you know, that have a bunch of MBAs, right? These are highly motivated folks that are really focused on creating competent employees and caring about those employees, and again, focusing more on operational excellence rather than compliance when it comes to trying to be effective around risk management.
No doubt. And a brief aside, I think, talking about, well, that all sounds good, but can you scale it? And the answer is yes. I mean, that's the smallest company that we've got on in mind as a part of this conversation, but there are several others with well over 1,000 employees, and their loss rate per 100,000 employees, their EMR, their OSHA incident rates are, you know, EMR in the sevens, you know, 0.7 in arena year over year. They're also in very high risk industries. Their OSHA rates and, you know, their loss rate per 100 is about half of all of the industry averages. And this one particular company I'm thinking of, you know, they do 3,000 compliance-based trainings every single year, and they do 12,000 technical trainings every year. It's all about how the work gets done. They've got professional development programs and tracks with competency checklists. And I think, look, these are businesses that have been around for a little while. And so if you're listening and you're thinking about your organization and saying, "Man, we don't, that sounds pretty complicated. We don't have that infrastructure. We don't have a professional development track. It seems like a lot to take on competency checklists and to organize these meetings and to leverage technology for knowledge transfer in real time, not just on a quarterly or annual basis," then I would say, let's sit down and have a conversation, because you don't start there. You start small, and you slowly build with a long view of how you manage your risk for the lifetime of your business. And when you do that, you make wise decisions and discerning decisions about how to perform in the risk. And that is through a lens of operational competence, operational excellence, and a culture that reinforces caring and competence among your rank and file employees and the leadership team.
Yeah, and I to reiterate that, I mean, that's something we can absolutely help with, and we'd love to have a conversation around. It's going to look different for every company. But again, to kind of end where we started, we have the fortunate position of being able to work with all different types of companies. And in many cases, the best ideas are stolen. And if you're a smaller company, we can help guide you with ideas we've seen work really well for small companies. But we can also sprinkle in ideas that have worked well for large companies. I think, you know, the size of the organization is almost immaterial. The through line, the commonality is, let's spend our time focused more on the ways to be operationally excellent rather than focusing all our time managing risk from a position or perspective of compliance. So this has been really helpful. I really appreciate you walking us through this. I feel like I always learn 10 different things from you every time I talk to you. But thank you for taking the time to do it.
Yeah, happy to. And again, I think the beauty in this is, as we've talked about for years, we're the great beneficiaries of clients who are really good. And so we're keen to continue to learn and evolve as we observe and identify those folks who, man, we can really partner with and come alongside to grow together and to improve. And so thanks for having me on. Always enjoy this. And we'll talk to everybody soon.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Take care.